Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, September 22, 2023. Section A, State and Local News. Will Midlanders vote for DeSantis over Trump? By Stuart Doreen. Can Florida Governor Ron DeSantis beat Donald Trump in Midland? That is the question after DeSantis's visit Monday for the second time in 4 months on Wednesday. DeSantis is the only other Republican presidential candidate polling in double-digit percentages, according to Real Clear Politics' average of national polls, although he trails the former president by around 46 percentage points. A stalwart of Republican Party politics in Midland and beyond, Ernie Angelo, previously told the Reporter-Telegram that DeSantis is clearly the hope for the Republican Party and the country to win the presidency in 2024. At Wednesday's event at a North Midland drilling site, Angelo said he supported DeSantis when he ran for U.S. Congress and then during bids for the Florida governor's office. He complimented DeSantis for governing like he campaigned. "He's the answer to what this country needs," Angelo said. "Demonstrating that you know how to run things, you know how to manage situations, you know how to make decisions and to make things happen is important. He has proven that. But can he beat Trump in Midland County?" In 2016, before Trump rose to prominence as a Republican favorite in Midland County and across the nation, he finished second to Senator Ted Cruz inside Midland County during the Republican primary, 47.9% of the vote to 20.86%. Trump later claimed a sizable 74.75% of the vote during the general election. In 2020, after 4 years of serving as the 45th president of the United States, Trump claimed a 77.3% of the vote inside Midland County during the general election. Still, donors are testing the waters for other candidates. In June, DeSantis attended a fundraiser in Midland that included hosts Angelo, Kyle Stallings, Javed Anwar, and Douglas Scarborough, according to a previous report from the Texas Tribune. The Houston Chronicle later reported that oil and gas executives were well represented among DeSantis's early Texas donors, including Cody Campbell of Double Eagle Energy Company in Fort Worth and S. Javed Anwar of Midland Energy. On Wednesday, former Midland City Councilman Jeff Sparks was at the DeSantis event near Air Park Executive Airport at a Permian Deep Rock drilling site. Sparks appreciates DeSantis's conservative policies that have turned Florida from a purple political state to Republican red. "I think DeSantis has a better shot of winning the general election than our current frontrunner," Sparks said. "If Trump is our nominee, I will vote for him. But I know some people who won't, and we can't afford another 4 years of an administration like we have with this one. Even if it's a different administration, but they are like this one, we can't afford it as a country. I think we will lose our freedoms completely. So that's another reason that I support Governor DeSantis." On Wednesday, DeSantis, starting a 3-day tour in Texas, returned the compliments, stating his appreciation for the region and what it does for America. "I've gotten to know a lot more about the industry, and I've gotten to know a lot of the folks. And I'm really impressed that this is one of the industrial jewels of America," DeSantis said. "And what is done here is vitally important, not just for our country, but really for countries around the world. So my hat's off to everyone in the industry. I know that we need to make sure that we get going on a better footing. But this industry is going to thrive. We're going to have folks that are going to have good jobs for many, many years and many, many decades as a result of what's going on here. And look, not just up here. You've got the Marcellus formation throughout much of the Appalachian Basin. And with the amount of gas that they can get from the Marcellus, the U.S. would never have to worry about energy really ever again. If you look at what they've been able to identify, they could export natural gas all around the world. we could really choke Russia. We could choke these other countries, and we could be not only energy dominant, but increase our national security vis-a-vis some of the hostile nations out there. That's within our power. Former NBA standout speaks at China Aid Banquet. Ennis Cantor Freedom discusses human rights advocacy by Ben Schaefer. Ennis Cantor Freedom was drafted third overall to the Utah Jazz in the 2011 NBA draft. He played 11 seasons as an NBA center for the Utah Jazz, Oklahoma City Thunder, New York Knicks, Portland Trail Blazers, and Boston Celtics. During those seasons, the 6-foot 10-inch Freedom used his NBA platform to speak out against political bribery and corruption in his native country, Turkey, and to advocate for human rights across the world. On Thursday night, Freedom was the keynote speaker at China Aid's banquet at Green Tree Country Club. Both Freedom and China Aid founder Bob Fu have dedicated their lives to speaking out against and resolving human rights violations in China, Turkey, Venezuela, Cuba, and around the world. "It started with what happened in my home country, Turkey," Freedom said. "There was a lot of corruption, scandal happening over there. Obviously, human rights violations are happening in not only my home country, but everywhere around the world. I started to speak out because of the NBA platform. Whenever I said something, it was becoming a conversation." Now retired, Freedom has remained an outspoken voice against the Turkish government and human rights violations taking place in China, Venezuela, Cuba, and more. His activism and dedication to his cause has not come cheap. In 2019, as a summary of the backlash he's received for his activism, he tweeted, "Haven't seen or talked to my family 5 years. Jailed my dad. My siblings can't find jobs. Revoked my passport. International arrest warrant. My family can't leave the country. Got death threats every day. Got attacked, harassed. Tried to kidnap me in Indonesia. Freedom is not free." Freedom grew up in an educated household. His father was a college professor and his mother a nurse, and that expanded his worldview. Many kids growing up in the Middle East, you know, anti-Semitic, anti-West, anti-American, and I came from a very educated family. They were always trying to do the best that they could to teach me about issues happening around the world, stand up for what I believe in, even if it means pretty much sacrificing everything I have, he said. According to Freedom, many political leaders and influential figures in the United States and beyond do not speak out against human rights violations in China because of China's worldwide influence. "When you look at the world, China pretty much runs a lot of things," Freedom said. "That's why a lot of leaders, prime ministers, or presidents won't talk about the issues over there. Right now, there are maybe like 2 or 3 countries around the world that are speaking out about these issues, like Taiwan, Lithuania, some other countries, but it's not enough." Freedom said athletes, singers, rappers, and other celebrities don't call attention to Chinese human rights violations and modern-day slavery over fear of losing sponsorships. "Your sponsors will be canceled because every major, or not major, brand is trying to get into that Chinese market," he said. "Every movie in Hollywood and every athlete is trying to do something in China. So if you're a celebrity that's going to talk about these issues, you'll be canceled." As an example, Freedom discussed events that took place in 2021 with professional wrestling star John Cena. In an interview with Taiwanese broadcaster TVBS while promoting the 9th Fast and Furious movie, Cena said, "Taiwan is the first country to watch Fast and Furious 9. Beijing claims Taiwan is part of its territory, even though Taiwan has its own government, elections, and military." Days after the interview, Cena posted an apology video on social media. He spoke in Mandarin and claimed, "I love and respect China and Chinese people. I'm very, very sorry for my mistake." "It is horrible," Freedom said, shaking his head with disgust, wearing a t-shirt that read, "Keep Taiwan Free." Freedom hasn't just received backlash from his native country for speaking out against corruption. but he said the National Basketball Association has tried to keep Freedom quiet. They, the NBA, put a lot of pressure on me. I was like, I'm not talking about politics, I'm talking about human rights, and you guys are telling us to stand up for what we believe in. Freedom recalled the 2020 NBA season when, in response to the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police, the NBA supported players and sharing social justice messages on the back of their jerseys, written on their sneakers, and on social media. Freedom said the NBA was the first one to tell me to shut up when he brought up the idea of calling attention to Chinese and global human rights abuses during the 2020 season. When I started to talk about the problems that were happening in China, all my teammates knew that that was my last year and I was not going to play basketball ever again. Freedom's playing career didn't last much longer. On August 13, 2021, he was traded from the Portland Trail Blazers to the Boston Celtics. In early February 2022, Freedom was traded from Boston to the Houston Rockets. The Rockets waived him 4 days later. Freedom remains a critic of the NBA's LeBron James for his unwillingness to stand up to human rights violations in China. Freedom recalled meeting China 8 founder Bob Fu about a year ago at an event for the U.S. region of International Religious Freedom. Me and him met there. We had a really good conversation. He told me about this event, China 8's banquet, and I said, let's do it. Freedom purchased Fu's book Wednesday night and called the China 8 founder a living example of standing up for truth and standing up for what he believes in. Obviously, he had to pay some consequences, but right now, he's inspiring many people. I'm really excited to get to work with him, Freedom said. What is China 8? Midland-based China 8 is an international, Christian, nonprofit human rights organization that inspires, informs, and invites people to transformative action on behalf of persecuted people of all faiths in China. Our main goals are to equip leaders and encourage victims so that together we can bring religious freedom to all in China, according to its website, ChinaAid.org. Ramsey announces he will not run for re-election. The Republican is in his second term as Precinct 1 Commissioner, by Ben Schaefer. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey announced Thursday that he will not run for a third term as County Commissioner. Ramsey told the Reporter-Telegram that 8 years is enough for one person to serve as County Commissioner, and he has been humbled to see the support that voters have given him the past two election cycles. None of what we accomplished on the Commissioner's Court could ever happen without the support of more than 690 Midland County employees. For all these years, I have stood in amazement at the service, dedication, and true professionalism each one of these valuable members of our county family shows each and every day. Make no mistake about it, these great people are a family in every respect. Thank you for your service to our great county, Ramsey stated. The Precinct 1 seat represents much of West and Southwest Midland, the area around Midland International Airport and south of State Highway 191, closer to the Ector County line. Ramsey will serve through the end of 2024. The Midland Reporter-Telegram is scheduled to run an op-ed from Ramsey about his decision in the weekend edition. City updates agreement for Bass Pro Shops. Council could vote on deal with Hodges Development Services as early as Tuesday, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland has reported the highlights of its new agreement with Hodges Development Services and Bass Pro Shops. Those terms are likely to be voted on during a special meeting at the Midland City Council on Tuesday. They include increasing the 50% sales tax rebate from 7 years to 10 years, adding a $250 payment over 10 years from the city's hotel motel fund, increasing Midland Development Corporation funding to $5.5 million, an item that also must be approved by the Midland Development Corporation, providing a 100% city property tax abatement for 10 years. The current agreement calls for a 100% abatement for years 1 and 2, 80% abatement for years 3 and 4, 60% abatement for years 5 and 6, 40% abatement for years 7 and 8, and 20% abatement for years 9 and 10. The previous deal with Hodges Development Services was approved in March. The city in August voted for officials to revisit incentives for the development that includes Bass Pro Shops in Northwest Midland. We want to place Midland in the best position to bring the type of amenities the community has been asking us to bring to our city and to our region, Mayor Lori Blong stated earlier this week in an email. As city staff is working to bring this deal to a close, we are committed to upholding our word, and I look forward to voting in favor of Bass Pro Shops. Dan Corrales has previously stated the community should have a discussion about what is a wise spending of taxpayers' money. County leaders have approved a 10-year property tax abatement and 10-year sales tax rebate. C. Hodges Development Services plans a $45 million entertainment retail complex on 17.345 acres at State Highways 191 and 158. Under the Master Development Agreement, the MDC has agreed to contribute up to $5 million in infrastructure funding for roads, drainage, water, and other infrastructure. That includes two roads, an east-west extension of Sinclair Avenue, and a new north-south road. Once complete, all infrastructure will be dedicated to the City of Midland. Bass Pro Shops has announced in a press release it plans to open a retail store in Midland in late 2024. The new agreement is a response to concerns that Bass Pro Shops might decide on another location outside of Midland. The Desert Hippie Provides More Than Spiritual Healing by Morgan Taylor Thomas. For those of us who subscribe to holistic and metaphysical healing methods, finding or establishing judgment-free zones can be challenging, especially in West Texas, where miscommunication creates a taboo energy around the practice. Luckily, a handful of dedicated believers work tirelessly to provide the Tall City with the one-of-a-kind restorative discipline. The team at the Desert Hippie and Company remain at the top of that list. Tucked away in Plaza Oaks sits the city's newest apothecary and spiritual healing brick and mortar. Inside, Amber Kiker, Kelly Keating, and Cody McCain co-own and operate the shop like a family, prioritizing a safe space for anyone who walks through the brown wooden door. Why? Because all three understand the vital importance of healing. A few years ago, Kiker started researching Eastern medicine and energy work in hopes of finding a remedy for personal health concerns. Westernized medicine didn't seem to cure. City. Animal Control picks up two javelinas in Midland by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland reported that Animal Control has picked up a pair of javelinas in Central Midland. The communications office reported that the javelinas were picked up in the 1200 block of Cuthbert Avenue on Thursday morning. There is social media content of the javelinas on the moveonnextdoor.com. Two javelinas running around on Cuthbert and G, said one commenter. The website desertmuseum.org states, javelina, also known as collared peccary, are medium-sized animals that look similar to a wild boar. They have mainly short, coarse, salt and pepper colored hair, short legs, and a pig-like nose. Javelina have long, sharp canine teeth, which protrude from the jaws about an inch. The website also states they can be found in the deserts of southwest Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and southward into Mexico and Central America, and into northern Argentina. DesertMuseum.org also states they are classified as herbivores, but will eat lizards, dead birds, and rodents. The City of Midland stated the javelinas are turned over to A to Z Veterinary Clinic. Fiddlestick Farms opens Saturday by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Fall is back, and so is Fiddlestick Farms. Packed with more than 25 attractions, delicious food, campfires, a 7-acre corn maze, 10-acre pumpkin patch, hayrides, farm animals, and more, Fiddlestick Farms provides families and Midlanders of all ages with all sorts of fun. Opening for the season this weekend, the farm will hold a mascot-themed event featuring all of your favorite West Texas teams, Other special weekend events include helicopter rides every weekend in October, fireworks every Saturday in October, doggy days September 30th and October 1st, grandparents weekend October 14th and 15th, dairy days October 21st and 22nd, live music, and so much more. Check out fiddlesticksfarms.com/events for a full list. There are also milking demonstrations, pig races, candy blaster, and foam parties. Passes can cost between $22 and $35. Purchase tickets at fiddlesticksfarms.com. Group discounts are also available. The season runs September 23rd to November 11th. The farm is open 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday and 1 to 6 p.m. Sunday. In November, hours run 1 to 6 p.m. Saturday. 5610 East County Road, Suite 120. At a glance, Fiddlesticks Farm opening weekends, 10 a.m. Saturday, 5610 East County Road, Suite 120. And tickets are bought at fiddlesticksfarms.com. High temps return to forecast by Stuart Doreen. If the National Weather Service forecast is accurate, the high temperature on Saturday will be 100 degrees. The NWS expects the warmer than average temperatures to continue well into next week, but called for a return to triple digits on Saturday. Should the temperature reach the century mark, it would establish a new record for September 23rd. The National Weather Service on its website shows the latest a 100-degree high temperature has been reported in Midland is October 8, 1979, at 100 degrees. Thursday's report, Thursday's high 92 degrees, typical high for September 21st, 86 degrees. Thursday's low 70 degrees, typical low for September 21st, 63 degrees. Previous record high for September 21st, 100 degrees in 1977 and 1998. Last 3 days, Tuesday 98 degrees, Wednesday 98 degrees, Thursday 92 degrees. Next 3 days, Friday 96 degrees, Saturday 100 degrees, Sunday 96 degrees. Rainfall, Thursday, trace this month, 0.9 inches. This year, 2.69 inches. Normal through September 21st is 10.49 inches. Next chance of rainfall is Monday. Emergency Management distributes naloxone to law enforcement by Ben Schaefer. The Midland County Emergency Management Department has distributed naloxone to local law enforcement agencies according to Midland County. Naloxone, commonly branded as Narcan, is a medicine that treats narcotic overdoses in emergency situations. This is in response to the legal claims filed by the state of Texas against opioid manufacturers in connection with the opioid crisis. A portion of one of those settlements requires providing naloxone, according to the press release. Each municipal police department, school district, and police department at higher education institutions statewide were eligible to receive a portion of the allotment, according to the press release. Distribution of this allocation was based on the size of the receiving department. MISD, Students Struggle with 8th Grade Math, Meet Other Goals, by Stuart Doreen. During Tuesday's Midland ISD School Board meeting, Midland ISD officials stated they wanted the public to know Lone Star Governance has helped provide the community more information about Midland ISD's transformation. The Reporter-Telegram, moving forward, will help with the awareness of the district's attempt to meet its Lone Star Governance goals. The following are Midland ISD's Lone Star Governance Measures 5.1, 5.2, 5.3 that were reported to the school board this week. 5.1, 8th grade math reporting. Percentage of students who demonstrate mastery of computations of algebraic relationships are measured by STAR. 2022, goal was 54%, outcome 53%. 2023, goal was 58%, outcome 44%. 5.2, first-time algebra end-of-course EOC testers. First-time algebra 1 EOC testers scoring at the meets grade level or above on the algebra 1 star assessment will increase from 39% to 49% by the end of the school year 2026. 2022 goal 41%, outcome 42%. 2023 goal 43%, outcome 42%. 5.3, first year ninth grade earning 6 or more credits. The percentage of first year grade 9 students earning 6 or more credits will increase from 85% to 89% by August 2026. 2022 goal 85%, outcome 87%. 2023 goal 86%, outcome 87%. 5.3, second year ninth grade earning 6 or more credits. The percentage of second year grade 9 students earning 6 or more credits will increase from 79% to 85% by August 2026. 2022 goal 79%, outcome 72%. 2023 goal 81%, outcome 82%. Midland gas prices rose 29 cents this year, by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices in Texas are 25 cents more per gallon compared to this time last year, AAA Texas reported this week. In Midland, that increase is 29 cents. As crude oil prices remain around $90 per barrel, steady demand and a slight drop in regional gasoline supply mean prices may not drop for a few weeks, according to the organization. The yearly switchover to cheaper winter blend fuel will come soon, according to AAA. Gas prices fluctuated around the state, but the state average dropped 1 cent to $3.42. Gas prices in Midland and Odessa did not change this week. Gas in Midland is still $3.48 on average, the fifth highest in the state this week. Fuel in Odessa still cost $3.42. Last year, gas prices in Midland were $3.19. In Odessa, prices were $3.17. Four of the five most expensive gas price averages in the state are found in West Texas cities, according to AAA Texas. Fuel in El Paso remains the most expensive in the state, $3.78, Amarillo, $3.66, Lubbock, $3.58, and Midland, $3.48, ranked second, third, and fifth, respectively. In addition, gas prices in Abilene dropped by 5 cents to $3.33. Gas prices in San Angelo dropped by 4 cents to $3.33 as well. Average gas prices in Abilene and San Angelo are tied for the fifth cheapest statewide. The cheapest fuel in Texas is found in McAllen at $3.26. AAA Texas reported Mississippi, Georgia, Louisiana, and South Carolina have cheaper gas price averages than Texas at $3.41. AAA described the difference between summer blend and winter blend gasoline as it relates to price. Summer blend gas contains 2% butane, but that percentage is higher in the winter blend. Butane is used as lighter fluid and is a secondary ingredient in fuel canisters used for gas grills and camping. As a fuel, butane is less expensive than other gasoline components, but its high volatility limits how much can be included in summer-grade fuel, AAA stated. Obituaries, Frances Van Curen. Frances Eileen Van Curen of Midland passed away on Monday, September 18, 2023. A celebration of her life will be held at Golf Course Road Church of Christ on Saturday, September 23, 2023, at 10:30 a.m. Frances was born on January 30, 1938, in Pitcher, Oklahoma, to Arthur Walkinshaw and Mary Steele Walkinshaw. Frances is survived by her daughter, Cheryl Purcell, and by sons Kenneth Van Curen and Mickey Van Curen. She is also survived by 6 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Frances is also survived by 1 sister, Janice Dilberding. She is preceded in death by her parents, Arthur and Mary Walkinshaw, her husband, Ray Van Curen, son, John Van Curen, sister, Deidre McCauley, niece Shelley Delperding, brother Larry Don Walkinshaw, and brother Bill Lowry. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Teen Challenge of Midland, GCR Building Fund, Hospice of Midland, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for September 22, 2023. STEM Takes Students Inside the Brain by Ruth Campbell. A program that STEM Academy teachers and administrators started researching about a year ago has come to life at the campus through a grant from the Education Foundation. Awardees are Curriculum Director Candace Sykes, Executive Director Shannon Davidson, and High School Project Lead The Way teacher Carrie Grammett Bauer. The $12,000 grant is called Unlocking the Secrets of the Brain. Davidson said she and Grammett Bauer heard about it at different times, but both thought it would be a great idea for the STEM Academy. When they heard about the Education Foundation grant opportunity, they thought that was a good time to go for it. Grammett Bauer said part of its VR headset that has been programmed with parts of pieces of the brain, so when students put it on, they're able to see the brain itself in 3D. Students will learn how to compare the size of a human brain compared to a rat brain, for example. The program to look at the brain was developed by Seaglass. Its website says Seaglass software allows you to view your data in its actual 3D or 4D over time form through virtual reality. We teach them how to use the VR headset as a tool in neuroscience. We go through several lessons like that. We're going to use the VR headset as a tool. The whole neuroscience field is the brain and the spinal cord, the nerves, how it looks, how the neurons work. We looked at all this through the 3D VR headset, Grammett Bauer said. The cool thing is, even though we only have certain amount of VR headsets, it's cast a big monitor. If you've chosen that day to be wearing it, the other two, three students. The cool thing is, even though we only have a certain amount of VR headsets, it's cast on a big monitor. If you're chosen that day to be wearing it, the other two or three students that are with you can still see the monitor. They're seeing everything that you're seeing. It's just that the particular day, one person is manipulating the controls. They can switch off to who does the controlling part of it, but everybody in the class can see it, she added. Starting around January, the second part of the grant, Citizen Science, will be implemented. This is when we pair up with a professor that's doing research on neuroscience and the way that the brain works. He dials in with them through the VR headset multiple times a week during our class period. He's showing them, this is my research. I need to help you conduct my research. He teaches the students how to read neurotransmitters, how to look at when you're moving and manipulating certain things, how they change when you're sleeping and awake. He teaches them how to do that. He's actually a research scientist at a university that's doing his own neuroscience research. He's using them in interns, sort of. He spends quite a bit of time with them, showing them that process, showing them how to do that field of work, how to put data down, and how to read the data. Basically, how to answer the hypothesis that he's researching for that year, Grammett Bauer said. The students will be authors on the paper that the professor writes because they've helped him research it. The class, which is Grammett Bauer, our senior level capstone course includes all three pathways that STEM offers: neuroscience, computer programming, and engineering. She added that they complement each other. This really does a good job of showing them that even though technically we're talking about neuroscience, which is a biomedical pathway, we're also looking at the VR headset as an engineering invention and how that works, but also the programming that goes behind the VR headset is something that our programmers would be interested in or could be interested in, Grammett Bauer said. Davidson said they wrote the grant with two University of Texas Permian Basin professors, Kara Rosenblatt and Haiti Jackson, who wanted to conduct research on the effects of virtual reality on learning. They want to see if it improves retention rates, and they're looking at student engagement to see how VR will improve that. The proposal will be submitted to the Institutional Review Board. Grammett Bauer said this will bring students real-life, hands-on experience. This is something they're truly a part of. The professor is counting on them to help with this research, and that makes it very relevant to them, she added. Grammett Bauer said there are a lot of careers connected to VR. It's the way things are going in education. It's hands-on and it's relevant. I'm excited to see how our three pathways at STEM, now that they've had 3 years of individualized education almost, how they see how the other pathways can support and enhance their projects moving forward, that they can pull the strings from each of their pathways, Sykes says. Davidson said the students have been traveling with their engineering, computer programming, or biomedical science peers, and now they're working together. They've created their own little cohorts, Sykes said. said, just like a university would have a college of education or a college of engineering, they've become very comfortable. I'm really curious to see how they blend and collaborate together and see how they can benefit one another. Sykes, Davidson, and Grammett Bauer said they were grateful to the Education Foundation for providing this chance. I don't know that this would have been the year for us if they hadn't been able to provide the grant. It was the direction we've been wanting to go, like has already been mentioned, but the grant allows us to make that happen sooner, Sykes said. They added that they would encourage others to apply for foundation grants. I think it's a great way to bring innovative ideas to the campuses and to try things that you normally wouldn't do because sometimes you just don't have the budget to try these different things. It was a perfect opportunity to bring that innovative piece that I just think helps take our learning further into the next level with our students, Davidson said. Grammett Bauer said they are always striving for relevant learning. Like I said, the older they get, the harder it is to reach that, she added. Davidson said the fun thing about Grammett Bauer is that she's always willing to take on a new challenge. She always says, I don't know how to do this, but I can learn right along with the kids. That's kind of what this class has been, Davidson said. She added that it's exciting to have a teacher who is willing to go outside their comfort zone and learn and grow with the students. I just think we lucked out with Miss Grammett Bauer. She's amazing. I think that none of this would have been possible without her to make sure that this goes in the right way. She'll do the whole class in the curriculum justice, and those kids are in for a huge treat this year, Davidson said. Diesel technology instructor plans to use career experiences while teaching TSTC students by Odessa American, September 22, 2023. Sweetwater, Chris Pittman, Texas State Technical College's newest diesel equipment technology instructor at the Sweetwater campus, noticed that what he was doing while working in the oil field could apply to the field of education. I worked mainly as a supervisor teaching new mechanics. I decided I should do it full-time and make a career of it, he said in a news release. After a career in the oil fields of West Texas and maintaining a fleet of diesel trucks, Pittman began his education career as the automotive instructor at Monahans High School, the release said. When I began teaching at Monahans, I knew I found my calling, he said. Teaching students the correct way to maintain a vehicle is what I need to be doing. However, his passion for diesel engines led him to apply for the TSTC instructor position. Since he started in the summer, Pittman has noticed the passion of the college's students. The students are willing to learn and want a career, he said. They're serious about their education. Pittman said, TSTC has the best style of learning for students. I like that they are mainly teaching in the labs, he said. Teaching theory is important, but the time in the lab makes it stick with a student. Pittman said his goal as an educator is to emphasize 2 points. I want each student to know that there is a safe way to do every job, he said. I also want them to know that it is okay not to know the answer, but they need to know where the answer is. According to OneTonOnline.org, jobs for bus and truck mechanics and diesel engine specialists were expected to increase 19% in Texas from 2020 to 2030. Such technicians employed in the state can earn an annual average salary of $50,970, the website stated. Diesel equipment technology is available at TSTC's Fort Bend County, Marshall, North Texas, Sweetwater, and Waco campuses. Depending on campus location, the program offers Associate of Applied Science degrees with different specializations, as well as several certificates of completion. The program is part of TSTC's Money Back Guarantee program. If a participating graduate does not find a job in their field within 6 months of graduating, TSTC will refund their tuition in full, the release said. For more information about TSTC, visit tstc.edu. Hobbs to host first annual Splash Bash this Saturday, September 21st, 2023, by staff report. The City of Hobbs will host its first annual Splash Bash at the City Park on Saturday, September 23rd. The event, which runs from noon to 4 p.m., will feature jump houses, DJ music, water games, food trucks, and more. City Park is located at 1001 East Clinton Street. Landgraf, Texas Strong, Strengthening the Backbone of Texas Energy by Guest View, September 22, 2023, by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. The Permian Basin has been at the heart of America's energy production for decades. Our region fuels our industries, powers our homes, and drives our nation's economy forward. And the tax revenue generated by energy production in our region funds critical infrastructure projects, bolsters our education system, and supports essential public services in Texas. It simply cannot be overstated. The Permian Basin plays a pivotal role in sustaining our way of life. Our region's energy production not only fuels our state's economy, but also strengthens our nation's energy security. That is, why is it imperative that our state invests in the Permian Basin to ensure its continued growth and productivity? Currently, severance taxes are deposited in the State General Revenue Fund, State Highway Fund, and Rainy Day Fund, with part of the deposits in general revenue earmarked for public education. Since 2014, severance taxes have contributed to $9 billion to public education, $13.3 billion to the State Highway Fund, and $13.3 billion to the Rainy Day Fund. Over that same time span, a small portion, 32 out of 254, of Texas counties generated 80% of the severance tax revenue for a total of nearly $40 billion. As you can imagine, the majority of those counties are located right here in the Permian Basin. By reimagining how we allocate severance tax revenue, we can ensure that the communities in the Permian Basin and over high-energy producing regions receive the support they deserve. I filed House Joint Resolution 111 and House Bill 2207, also known as Texas Strong, in the previous legislative session, aiming to do just that. This legislative package sought to amend the Texas Constitution and state law to create the Texas Severance Tax Revenue and Oil and Natural Gas Strong Defense Fund. The Strong Fund will receive a portion of severance tax revenue for the purpose of supporting transportation infrastructure, workforce and economic development, public education, health care, and public safety needs in regions of the state with the highest oil and gas production. In other words, Texas Strong would help address everything from teacher and nursing shortages to potholes. Our streets would also be made safer, not just with repairs, but with additional boots and badges, ready and trained to enforce CMV laws. Texas Strong even contained provisions to dedicate portions of the severance taxes collected by the state to be used for property tax relief statewide. It also dedicated some severance tax revenue to plug orphaned wells and clean up Texas air and groundwater contamination. I am more determined than ever to see this critical legislation become law. In the next legislative session, I intend to continue building on the progress we've made and rally support for Texas Strong, which passed out of the Texas House by a vote of 144-1. Texas Strong is more than just a proposal. It's a vision for the future of our great state. It's a commitment to defending the Texas energy industry, safeguarding our state budget, and strengthening our position in the global arena. It's about ensuring that the communities that have long been the backbone of our energy production receive the support they deserve. I'm incredibly proud to represent the Permian Basin, and I will continue fighting tooth and nail for us. When the Permian Basin thrives, Texas thrives, and when Texas thrives, America thrives. Laws have changed around parking for disabled Texans over the years. Here's how it looks today. By guest contributor, September 21, 2023. By Neelam Bora, the Texas Tribune. For millions of disabled Texans, accessible parking is vital to navigating daily life. A lasting impact of the Americans with Disabilities Act passed in 1990, the blue signage and crosshatches between spots have become more common than ever. They make it possible for people with a range of disabilities, some visible, some not, to access everything from hospitals and clinics to movie theaters and amusement parks. In Texas, almost 28% of people have a disability, according to a 2021 report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Texas Department of Motor Vehicles issued 325,966 permanent ADA placards in 2022, including renewals, according to the agency spokesperson, Adam Shevitz. But some advocates feel the system can still improve, as these spots need to be maintained and available when disabled people need them, even when there are crowds. Advocates say rules around people without disabilities parking in them need to be enforced better. They're abused a lot, said Chase Bearden, director of advocacy for the Coalition of Texans with Disabilities. They're a lifeline for those of us who need it, but at the end of the day, we need good enforcement and regulation of those spots. Over the years, lawmakers have introduced laws to tweak the system and address these concerns. Here's everything to know about what parking for disabled Texans looks like today. What is accessible parking? These parking spots must be located in the shortest accessible route to the accessible entrance, according to federal guidelines. Building owners have to set aside a certain number of parking spaces for disabled individuals that have a width and length in accordance with federal law. They have to include access aisles, usually marked by crosshatches, so there's space for people who use wheelchairs to get out of their cars or vans. Most people have no idea what the rules are about accessible parking, Bearden said, so they might park at an angle halfway across the crosshatch mark and not realize that they actually just made the other spot unusable for someone in a power chair that needs to unload. A state law passed in 2019 also requires that spots are clearly designated with a sign marked with the International Symbol of Access, also known as the wheelchair symbol. Am I eligible for accessible parking? To qualify for these parking spaces, a person must have a medical condition that meets the state's legal definition of disability. This can include people who are blind and people with mobility issues caused by a number of conditions, including lung disease or arthritis, according to the state's DMV website. Texas also offers temporary placards, which are red, for people who might have broken bones or muscle conditions that they don't expect to last longer than 6 months. If you qualify, you can apply for a placard through your local county tax assessor collector's office. A doctor or health care provider has to fill out part of the application. When applying, you can get a set of blue placards or license plate with the wheelchair symbol to show this qualification. One of these must be visible when parking in these spots and has to be used by either the disabled person or the person driving them, according to the website. How have new Texas laws changed accessible parking? In 2019, State Senator Drew Springer, a North Texas Republican, introduced a law to ensure people could recognize an accessible parking spot, requiring multiple signs including the wheelchair symbol and a no parking warning for the crosshatches so people wouldn't park there. Springer's wife, Lydia Springer, was in a diving accident more than 20 years ago and uses a wheelchair. When my wife now goes to a new building and a new sign that says no parking on it, it just makes her happy because she knows it's one fewer place that she's going to have to deal with. Is somebody going to squeeze next to my car where there's literally 6 inches between and I've got a 31-inch wheelchair? Springer said. Although advocates worked with Springer to pass that law at the time, it created an unintended consequence. Parking spots that weren't updated to follow the new rules were considered out of compliance with the state because they didn't have the correct signage. So when officers tried to ticket able-bodied people when they parked in designated spots, the tickets would get dropped and no consequences would follow. Judges were dismissing these cases, therefore cops weren't trying to write any more tickets because they were just getting dismissed, Springer said. To fix this loophole, Springer worked this year to pass SB 904, a bill that would ensure people would still receive citations for parking in a disabled parking spot where signage has not been updated. The lack of signage compliance could no longer be used as a defense. Another separate law in 2021 changed the eligibility of who could use these parking spaces. Anyone with a disabled veteran's license plate could park in these spots before 2022, but the law now requires a medical sign-off to either get a placard or wheelchair symbol in addition to their license plate. 30% of veterans in Texas are disabled, according to a report from Every Texan, a nonprofit that advocates for access. How are violations of accessible parking laws enforced? Texans who misuse disabled parking placards or parked in spaces without appropriate signs can be fined up to $1,250 and given up to 50 hours of community service, according to the state. Law enforcement officers can also seize a placard they believe to be counterfeit. But law enforcement doesn't necessarily catch them all, said Mac Marsh, the project director for Parking Mobility, an Austin-based nonprofit that works to combat accessible parking violations in multiple states. The Parking Mobility app allows people to report offenses they see. The information is then forwarded to the city, which tickets the vehicles. In 2013, Marsh said he tracked offenses and quickly found that they were everywhere all the time, with few consequences. Conversations with law enforcement revealed that judges were dismissing cases because they felt high fines were punitive, Marsh said. As an alternative, Marsh developed a class that educates people why those spaces are important, teaches them the rules, and encourages them not to repeat offend, Marsh said. Springer said it still might not be enough. Sometimes people justify in their own mind, I'm running in there for 30 seconds. I've been to this parking lot 200 times. I've never seen anybody in any of these 10 spots, so they think it's okay, Springer said. But when you repeatedly keep doing that, I think the penalty should look at potentially rising. Where can I get more information? The Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities held a training session on accessible parking earlier this month, and you can view it here. Find the application for a placard or license plate symbol here. More information for the state's DMV website can be found here. Neelam Barra is a disability reporting fellow covering accessibility issues affecting Texas. She was a member of the 2022-23 New York Times fellowship class. Her fellowship between the New York Times, the Texas Tribune, and the National Center on Disability and Journalism at Arizona State University. The fellowship is funded through a grant from the Ford Foundation. Disclosure. Coalition of Texans with Disabilities, Every Texan, and New York Times have been financial supporters of the Texas Tribune, a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization that is funded in part by donations from members, foundations, and corporate sponsors. Financial supporters play no role in the Tribune's journalism. Find a complete list of them here. This article originally appeared in the Texas Tribune at https://www.texastribune.org/2023/09/20/texas-accessible-disabled-parking/. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. Odessa College presents 2023 Car Show at OC Sewell Auto Tech by Odessa American, September 21st, 2023. The 2023 Odessa College Car Show comes this weekend to the OC Sewell Auto Tech facility, and approximately 100 vehicles will be on display for the enjoyment of all. The show includes 11 classes of vehicles ranging from vintage original to modern, muscle, and trucks, and everything in between, including imports and exotics. The OC Sewell Auto Tech facility is located at 2425 East 8th Street. The event is open and free to the public, and the show opens at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 23rd. The award ceremony starts at 2 p.m. This is just our second year to have the show, and it's an amazing community event that is growing. The vision for the Auto Diesel Technology Program and the OC Sewell Auto Tech Facility when it was established was that it would benefit the general public as well as our students in the program. This is one of the ways that we reach out to our community, Department Chair of Auto Diesel Technology, Rob Turner, said in a news release. We are so fortunate to have community partners such as Sewell Family of Companies and Rogers Ford of Midland, who are supporters of our students, graduates, and the program. They also have generously worked together to cover all cost of the car show so that all of the proceeds may go to the Elijah Barrera Memorial Scholarship, Turner added. Elijah was a member of the First Asset Automotive Student Service Education Training Program cohort and was already employed by Sewell Ford. He graduated on a Friday in May of 2022 and on the following Sunday passed away as a result of a tragic motorcycle accident. His fellow cohort of students suggested that a scholarship that was to be presented at the first OC Car Show in August 2022 be named in honor of Elijah. Other community partners have also generously donated to grow the scholarship. Warren Catt has donated $10,000 and Caterpillar Inc. has donated $5,000. Any current or future students of the Auto Diesel program are eligible to apply for the scholarship through the OC Foundation. Representatives from Sewell Family of Companies, Rogers Ford of Midland, Warren Catt, Yellow House Premier Trucking Service, Odessa Fire and Rescue, and the Odessa Police Department will be at the event and will be available to speak about the opportunities that are available for students and graduates in their fields. Red Cross volunteer Shane Bell inspires with commitment to helping people in crisis. September 21, 2023 by Mike Aldex. The Bob Cornell Award isn't something that is given out every year. We will give it when it is needed and when it is earned, said Tracy Austin, executive director of the Permian Basin chapter of the American Red Cross. A consummate local volunteer, the late Bob Cornell, developing lifelong lung damage after volunteering for the Red Cross in New York City in the wake of 9/11. He never complained and continued to serve as a dedicated volunteer for the organization. And the thing that I remember the most about Bob, he was in his 80s, and he would come in my office and say, "I am ready to deploy," Austin said. Cornell's commitment to the Red Cross is difficult to match, but when an award in his name was created early this year, the Red Cross already had a deserving candidate in mind. "Of course, Shane Bell is the first person in mind that needed to get it," Austin said. "He has done that level." Bell, who has volunteered for the local Red Cross for more than 30 years, holding every position in the organization, from disaster scene responder to trainer of responders, became the first recipient of the Bob Cornell Award in April this year. "Like Cornell, Bell's commitment to the Red Cross knows little bounds," said Austin, where he's working at his job maintaining the facility soft services for a major oil company in Midland, or partaking in his passion for gaming and organizing gaming tournaments. Bell finds ways to promote and support the critical work of the Red Cross. "He is always committed, always thinking about Red Cross, about how he can help the organization and the people and clients we help. This past July, a Super Smash Brothers event Bell organized at the Bush Convention Center raised $1,600 for the organization. In just a few days, Bell is inviting the Permian Basin's gamers to take part in Rescue Royale, during which they can use their favorite platform during October to raise funds for Red Cross disaster relief efforts. Bell hopes to raise $10,000 next month. Of course, Bell provides the Red Cross with far more than fundraising support. He often invests enough his personal time with the organization to make it second full-time job. 2 years ago, he spent his hard-earned Christmas vacation supporting victims in tornado-ravaged Kentucky. After that response, Austin nominated Bell for one of the Permian Basin's highest honors for service, the Judge Pat Baskin Family Volunteer of the Year Award at the Nonprofit Management Center's Beacon Awards. Bell was humbled to receive the coveted award in November 2022, but winning the Bob Cornell Award held a particularly special place in his heart. In fact, the normally mild-mannered, unflappable Bell was in tears when the Red Cross presented him with the honor. "I didn't know at the time that Bob had mentored Shane," said Austin. "Bob was Shane's first contact in this chapter, took him under his wing, showed him everything he needed to know to get started. It came full circle." Bell is a West Texas native who served in the U.S. Navy before developing a career in information technology. He first encountered the local Red Cross when he helped clean its garage as part of a fellow Eagle Scouts project. Sarah Boring, the chapter's director of disaster services, learned Bell lived only a block away. She proposed that the teenager, who was 13 or 14 years old at the time, come help out after school. "She started having me clean up after CPR classes, put away files, things like that," Bell said. "She introduced me to working in disasters. I started training and learning everything the Red Cross does when a disaster happens." In high school, Bell began responding to house fires, the most common disaster that the Red Cross addresses. He's continued responding to the disaster scenes on and off for the last 3 decades, including the 2019 mass shooting spree in Odessa and Midland. He holds a role in every level of the organization because he applies all of his talent in an effort to benefit our mission, Austin said. "And our mission is really simple, to alleviate human suffering and to motivate the generosity of our donors." Bell is clearly dedicated to that mission. Don't try asking him to brag about himself, as this reporter unsuccessfully attempted. Any question surrounding his accomplishments becomes an opportunity for Bell to preach about the importance of the Red Cross's services. "We meet people on the worst day of their lives and give them a ray of hope," said Bell, referencing the Red Cross volunteers who respond to disaster scenes. "When we get there, the fire department is still at the scene, and the fire may still be going. And you walk up to the family who is in shock as they watch their home and life burn down. Just the thought of family pictures and all that history being lost. And you're there to comfort them and let them know someone is there to help." Bell said his Red Cross team provides individualized support, identifying shelter, food, and clothing and other needs to get them through the first 48 hours. A team of caseworkers follows up to help individuals and families on their recovery plan, from working with pharmacies to replace medications to connections with agencies that help people find stable housing or organizations that help repair homes or appliances, he said. "I do it because they need someone to be there for them," Bell said. Bell points out that large disasters like hurricanes and tornadoes draw large responses from multiple well-resourced agencies like FEMA, but when it comes to a house fire, there isn't that level of response, and yet the people impacted are often just as devastated. So Bell, in his mid-40s, said he doesn't plan to stop being there for victims anytime soon, and that's a good thing because people aren't volunteering as much as they were in the 1990s, a problem that only worsens since the COVID pandemic. "Some people have hung up their vests," Bell said. "It's not just Red Cross, but all of the organizations." Bell encourages more residents of the Permian Basin to consider volunteering for the Red Cross. He points out that they don't have to put in 30 to 40 hours a week like he does, nor do they need to donate funds, although donations are always welcome. "It's only a few hours per week, especially if they are not a disaster team responder," Bell said, noting that volunteers can help with projects that include installing smoke alarms in houses for free twice a year. Online training has lifted a barrier to entry for volunteers, he added. For Bell, an award or an article is never as important as finding ways to get more help to people in need. And that, says Austin, is a big reason why he is the first and the only, for a long while, recipient of the Bob Cornell Award. "He is always committed," Austin said, "always thinking about Red Cross, about how we can help the organization and the people and the clients we help."
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.